This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is WMVP Chicago, ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. It's Bleck and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Bleck and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Welcome in to Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can watch the show on Twitch. Search for the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. The Twitch chat having a lively discussion over our comments on
the Twitch
Sam
chat
Darnold.
For some reason, the people on Twitch, and there's like three of them that comment all the time, they hate Jay. It's like Jalen Hurts peed in their cereal for some reason.
It's Jalen Hurts. It's Sam Darnold. And right now, they're going after Darnold because we both said we would buy Sam Darnold stock if we could. And I said that I would sell Josh Allen stock.
Sell.
Right now, the chat in the Twitch feed right now, off the chain, talking about Sam Darnold, which I didn't expect it to do. But people really don't like
off the chain.
Yeah, I said it. I slipped that in there. It worked. It was fine. Don't look at me like this is a Kaplan moment.
You said off the chain.
Yeah, it's
Sean producing the show tonight on ESPN 1000. Sean,
Twitch chat is hot.
Chris saying off the chain a Kaplan moment.
I wouldn't put it up there.
See, take that.
It's a moment.
Take that.
It's a moment.
It's a moment. It's a moment. Not a Kaplan moment, though.
I think it's a Kaplan moment.
See, that's a loss for you, sir.
It's not a loss for me. You said off the chain the way Cap says lit.
I thought it worked fine. That was all right. I think we're okay. I'm surprised at people being so upset with my pick of Sam Darnold.
Well, I mean, you're biased, first of all.
Am I? Or do I have more information?
No, I think you're biased. I think you're USC biased. You're looking it through crimson and gold colored glasses. And you're a bit biased. Because you guys have the same haircut. You're a bit biased.
You don't like a 62% completion percentage?
I mean, it could be higher.
19 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Got to work on the interceptions.
Minshew
threw
more and more touchdowns, less interceptions. All I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Is he great? No. If I had to buy a stock of a young quarterback, I'd be in on Sam Darnold. I'd be in on Baker Mayfield. I'd be in on Kyler Murray. There's a lot of these young quarterbacks that I like. You know, the ones I don't like, the Gardner Minshews, Josh Allen, ugh, not for me. It just isn't.
All right.
And I know I talked myself into the Daniel Jones, but like that's not like something that's really going to get me going.
West Coast Bias on the Twitch chat says that Darnold has small hands.
I've heard that before. And that's why he loses the ball in the pocket. You know, like when he brings it down, a la Jay Cutler?
Yeah.
Gets hit away? I've seen that before.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what you have.
It's off the chain, man.
Okay, all right. You're going to do that the rest of the night? Off the chain?
No, I'm just asking.
I mean,
I'm just saying, it's off the chain.
Can we hear from Bill Lazor?
In the hizzy.
Can we hear from the Bears coaches?
Sure.
Here's Bill Lazor from earlier today talking about the quarterback competition. Did you say off the hizzy?
In the hizzy.
I mean, what is going on here?
Off the chain.
Ended with a shizzy, dude.
In the hit? No, that's too much.
Now that's cap.
That's
cap.
You know it.
Say it.
No, I'm not going to say it. Bill Lazor.
Mm.
Earlier today, talking about the quarterback competition for the Chicago Bears.
Well, I've been a part of certainly lots of competitions, but even the quarterback competitions before. I think, I don't know if it sounds like a cliche, but the you just have to let the thing play out. You know, you got to let guys earn it. Sometimes your gut tells you, sometimes you it helps to look at the statistics every day, you know, though it's not a game situation, but of practice. And you just take in all the information. I worked for a coach one time, and actually the battle was, this was a very old wise coach, who'd won numerous Super Bowls, and the battle was for the backup quarterback job. And I just remember after one of the preseason games, he came to me. He said, you know, when that guy went in the huddle, I just watched how the team changed, you know. And so there are so many different factors that go into it. Some of it is real statistical, and some of it is watching a guy and how he presents himself. And hopefully we have plenty of preseason games, because I think that's the most fair way, I think, for the guys, is to let them play on the game field. That's the most fair. So hopefully they get an opportunity to do that.
So that's Bill Lazor, the offensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears. So a fair quarterback competition is what we will have between Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky when we get to whatever this training camp's going to be in this fall heading into the football season.
Yeah, when you're allowed to have a competition, you know, and Nagy said that earlier this season when he was asked first about how the competition's going. He's like, well, it's not, because we can't. You can't have a competition over Zoom. I can't sit there and watch them throw to guys, or, you know, just judge them by looking into their eyes and into their souls and knowing who's going to be. But, you know, Trubisky seems to think that the shortened off season and lack of practices will benefit him, because he knows the guys and he knows the teammates and he knows this. And I think it benefits Foles, because Foles knows the coaching staff. Everybody on that offense knows Nick Foles. Everybody on that offense has worked with Nick Foles and the offensive coaching staff. Yeah. So to me, it benefits him. And if he comes in, like, look, we know who's a better quarterback, Nick Foles or Mitchell Trubisky?
Foles.
Okay. So if it's the same system and Trubisky knows the system, and Foles knows the system.
Does he know the system?
Let's say Trubisky knows the system. He is aware of the system's existence.
Okay.
Okay? And he's thrown to guys.
He's aware of his existence.
He throws it. Who's more like
it, it sounds like my understanding of chemistry in high school.
I understood the existence
I understood
of
that I went to chemistry classes. I have no idea what's going on, though.
No, I can't do formulas. So I think that he's, you know, Foles is going to have the edge when it comes to doing the basic things that quarterbacks can do, fitting the ball into tight pockets, getting the ball out to open receivers, reading a defense, going through his progressions, getting to that second and third read, creating more room in the pocket by moving around and being, you know, not having happy feet, you know, not having the bad footwork that Trubisky has. He's just better at being a quarterback first than Trubisky. And since they both know the system, the edge is definitely to Foles.
Let's hear from John DeFilippo, the Bears quarterback coach. Earlier today on the Zoom conference call, he talked about the one thing he would do to help Mitchell Trubisky.
I think, you know, the thing that we need to do with Mitch early on is really just hone in on what he does well and what he thinks he does well. I have some of those things in mind. I don't want to talk too much scheme in here, but he and I had a long sit down, you know, really over Zoom, and, you know, had a really good conversation on what he does well and what he feels like he struggles with. And I think, you know, the thing with Mitch and with all of our quarterbacks is just having the same routine while the play's being called in until you have the ball in your hands and the ball's gone. I mean, just all of a sudden, you know, the play comes in. All right, I digest the play. I call the play with confidence. I get my eyes on the play clock. I look at the formation. So I just think, you know, the routine, okay, not only people talk about routine all the time, you know, off the field in terms of your weekly routine. I think there's a routine to, you know, calling the play and until you get the ball in your hand, until you release the football. So we're going to continue to work on that with Mitch. And obviously, you know, just the defensive recognition and all those things.
DeFilippo continues giving praise to Nick Foles.
Once you guys get around Nick, you'll realize just what a genuine person he is. It's legit. I mean, it's not fake. It's not phony. And it doesn't come across as phony or fake. And it's literally genuine. And when he asks you how, I put it, everyone asks, I've been asked this question a lot. And I was, you know, I told my wife the other day, I said, you know, I get asked this question about Nick all the time. And I said, you know what it is about Nick? I said, when he asks you how your day is going, he literally means it. Like he means like, hey, Flip, how you doing? You know, you look tired. You know, like last year in Jacksonville, you look stressed out. What's going on? You know, like he generally means it. And I just think, it comes across as genuine with not only players and coaches, but everyone in the building. And so I think obviously it's not ideal to answer the second part of your question. It's not ideal the way this offseason was going, where not on the field, because you can't, we all know. I mean, we can sit here and say the Zoom deal is the next best thing since sliced bread, but it's not. I mean, it's not the same as being on the field with your teammates, you know, high-fiving your teammates. It's just not the same. And so we can't pretend it to be the same. So, but at the same time, I do think a guy with Nick's character and Nick's the way he operates his business, I do think that will help him assimilate with his teammates faster. Also, this is not the first time Nick Foles has changed teams. So you've seen the change from Philly to St. Louis, St. Louis to Kansas City, back to Philadelphia, Jacksonville, and now Chicago. So it's not the first time he's done this where, you know, I've been in other spots where a quarterback gets, you know, changes teams for the first time and can be a little bit of a shell shock.
So that's quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo for the Chicago Bears speaking to the media earlier today. So it's the first time we get to hear from the assistant coaches to Matt Nagy. We've heard from Matt Nagy a few different times here in this offseason. Any takeaways from what you heard? Basically, to me, it sounds as if, okay, we get a quarterback competition. All of the coaches are supportive, and they know exactly what they're going to get from Nick Foles. And Nick Foles is a quote, solid pro who's going to come in here and do the job. And if Mitch can figure it out, great. If not, we have someone who's going to take care of business, basically.
It's going to be a nice off, Chris. It's going to be a nice off.
Here's two
gonna
be, nice guys, just two nice guys. Enough.
You know what? And you know what? That Trubisky, that friendly dude that's going to bring in donuts the first day to the coaches. I'd be like, hey, guys, you guys, I brought some donuts.
He's going to walk into the room.
Do you want some donuts?
But there's already going to be donuts sitting on the table. Because
Foles will have already been there.
For an hour.
His feet up. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Been like, oh, we already ate a bunch of donuts. Would you like to, we can't indulge again. I'm sorry.
Just two guys like Ned Flanders, nice and off to each other, just being super nice, helping each other throughout the playbook, helping each other through the games. Fantastic.
Stupid, sexy Flanders.
I mean, if you want edge for your football season, come to the Chicago Bears. They've got nice guys in the quarterback room. I don't know why I find that funny. It's a good thing. Like, it's better than being like, yeah, they're bad dudes.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, Foles comes in, he's like usually it's sports my radio, job. Get the F out.
Sports radio is like bashing the guys who suck. Like, oh, these guys are too nice.
See, that's the problem. They're looking at each other in the eye. They're shaking the hand like real, well, I mean, the fist, whatever they can do. And they're just like, yeah, yeah, how are you? No, how are you?
How are you?
How are you?
How are you doing?
How are you doing?
How's your family?
How's your family doing?
How's your wife? Yeah, yeah, she's great.
Yeah?
Great.
I don't have a wife. How are you? How's the dog?
You already asked me that. How are you?
Just asking again, bro. Just making sure you're doing good. Give a little shoulder rub.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000 on Instagram, ESPN underscore Chicago. It's where you can find us on IG. You can also watch the show on Twitch. ESPN 1000 Chicago is our Twitch channel. Did you see this tweet from Teddy Greenstein earlier today, Abdallah? Here's a tweet from Teddy G. Someone high up in college athletics just told me it's 50-50 at best that the college football season is played. And the concept that large crowds will come to games is ridiculous. A slimmer schedule, 10 games in 10 weeks, that could help. That's from Teddy Greenstein earlier today. Are you worried that the college football season won't actually take place with students returning to campus? I know I talked about earlier today on Cap and Company that it was North Carolina's president was on 60 Minutes on Sunday saying, we're having full students on campus in the fall. We're projecting that. Are you worried that schools are going to get kids to campus and then they're going to have outbreaks of COVID-19 and then thus cancel the college football season?
Well, I mean, it depends on how serious the students are taking it, right? Like, this is on, if you're a student and you're going to school in the fall, this is on you, right? The responsibility is on you to be aware of what you're doing. Wear a mask when you're supposed to. Stay 6 feet away when you're supposed to. If you're sick, don't go to class. Follow all the guidelines and don't screw this up for us, right? Like, the NCAA put out their preseason. They're going to start 6 weeks of preseason. Like, they're going on. They just finalized it today. This is from the NCAA. Football Oversight Committee finalizes proposed preseason model. It's going to be 6 weeks of preseason, up to 8 hours of weight training, conditioning, and film review per week. Under the proposed model, assuming a school's first scheduled football contest, it's on Saturday, September 5th. So they went through this whole thing. So from July 24th to August 6th, they can be required to participate. It just goes through the whole thing. Basically, you've got 6 weeks of your preseason activities can start.
Yep.
That's what this is saying. Now, it's going to be a matter of how teams handle it, right? Houston did it the wrong way. Houston was doing it where they were only testing kids that complained of symptoms instead of testing everybody. And they had six kids that had symptoms that were symptomatic. They shut everything down. They sent everyone home. Alabama, a couple other schools, Oklahoma, I believe, had a couple kids test positive. They quarantined them. Business as usual. Everything's fine so far. They haven't had any shutdowns or any problems like that. They're not releasing names of the players, HIPAA rules, because it's different with, you know, kids that are, I mean, I guess they're adults, so technically it would be the same thing. But if they don't want to disclose the names, they don't have to. You know, it's not like we're going to find out if, like we did with Ezekiel Elliott.
Well, I don't think we were supposed to find that out.
No, it didn't actually violate any HIPAA rules.
He wasn't happy about it.
Well, he cannot be happy, but if something leaks, it leaks. You know, like, it's not it technically wasn't a violation of HIPAA rules.
Okay.
As they, as people reported, people smarter than me who know these rules reported.
I'll take your word on it.
I think if the availability is there, people will go. Some people will be hesitant, but people will also go. Like, I was talking with Waddle and Sylvie about this yesterday. If my favorite band said that they were playing a show in a controlled environment, like if they were at the Chicago Theater, right? And they did 30% capacity, and you had guaranteed 6 feet around you was going to be empty, which they've done in some venues. Like, some venues have opened. You do 6 feet around you that's empty. You're wearing a mask. You go to the show. There's no, like, concessions or anything like that. You're just paying to see the show, and then you leave, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, what's the difference between me doing that and going to a restaurant and sitting 6 feet away from people without a mask on? There's no difference.
No, I don't
mean, the
think
only
so.
Difference is that you're inside or you're outside. And if, by all accounts, if everything stays the same, the way we've got 3% positivity right here in Illinois, we might be in phase three that has restaurants at 50% or 25% capacity, whatever it is, depending on how big their buildings are, inside by July 1st. Like, that could be happening. So what's the difference? And if you can tell me that you can fit 20,000 people in a stadium in a controlled environment, now it's different. Here's the difference, okay? I don't think they'd sell, like, the bleachers at Wrigley, but I think that they would sell individual seats, you know, because in the bleachers, it's first come, first serve. You get as close as you want, you know, like that kind of thing. So, like, if you're just doing a free-for-all, they're not going to do that. But if you can have, or the bleachers, I think they sell them individually, but still, you get really close to each other. We've been in the bleachers. You're right there next to each other. But if you can sell individual seats and make sure that you're keeping people 6 feet away from each other in clusters of seats, people are going to go. There will be people that go. There are people that do things. I mean, look, as soon as, like, the Ozarks open, people flock to it. Beaches, people flock to it. The lakefront path isn't technically open. It's been open for 2 weeks. Trust me. Nope. It's been open.
I've been out there. I've seen it. The tape was ripped down. I saw it.
People will go. And am I worried that they might have to stop? Sure, of course. It's like any sport. You know, you worry about if the NBA starts, are they going to have to stop? If baseball starts, are they going to have to stop? But I think that football is such a big sport, and you can have enough people on your roster that I think that they'll actually be, as long as they handle it the right way and test everybody and handle the quarantines the right way, I don't see why not.
Okay, so am I out of my mind to think this way?
Probably.
A college campus, for the most part, is somewhat secluded from the rest of society, right? Students are there in dorms. They go to their classes. Yeah, they go to parties, usually on campus.
Dude, have you been to a dorm?
Yeah. No, I know. It's everyone's on top of each other. I understand. But what I'm saying is our generation, we're millennials. The generation that's below us, Gen Z, they are way smarter than we are. And they are way more progressive and way more understanding than I think previous generations were. And if you give the guidelines to 18-year-olds, who I know most people would immediately say an 18-year-old is not, what's the word, responsible, right? But I would suggest that maybe, to have hope, that maybe these kids understand what's in front of them, and they would know that, like, hey, we can't do what we're used to do, what we used to do when you go to school, right? Like, going to a frat party with 1,000 people in one little building, that's not going to cut it for this fall semester until the pandemic's over. Like, am I crazy to think, like, I get it. The initial response, and someone listening is probably like, Bleck, you're an idiot. 100%. Kids are going to show up on campus, and the COVID-19 numbers are going to skyrocket, and it's going to be a disaster. Or is there a possibility that a part of this story could be young people leading the way, like showing us how to socially distance, kind of get through day-to-day life, and get things done in the different times that we're in? Am I crazy to think that there's a possibility, there's an outside chance that these Gen Z kids know how to handle this?
Yes. You're crazy. Kids are stupid.
So you think that this is just going to be a complete disaster? Yeah, when kids absolutely. Show up on campuses, well, it's going to be a complete disaster.
Here's the thing, though. We've seen that the way that the coronavirus affects young people is completely different than the way it affects everybody else, right? Like, half of a class of students could be walking around with coronavirus and not even know it. Because they're younger and it just doesn't affect them the same way. Some of them may be affected. Some of them may be affected. But a majority of them, based on the numbers,
yeah,
majority of them have not been affected. So you could technically do it. I don't
trust
kids.
But for the most part, those kids are all staying in one spot.
You and I were in Tuscaloosa a few years ago.
Oh, I know. I know.
Like,
and listen, different parts of the country will probably handle it differently. Like, I bet you in the deep south, it's going to be different than, say, in like Palo Alto. Right? Like, it's going to be a different way students are going to respond to it.
Dude, we were in those bars. We were in Innisfree. We were in Houndstooth. You don't think that, like, those places aren't going to be packed? You don't
I'm sure
think
they
that
will.
Those. We walked by the frat parties. You don't think that those places are going to. You think that they've got enough campus security to go around and bus frat parties
well,
and stuff like
I
that?
I don't know if it's.
Think of the dorms.
No,
think
I'm
of
not.
Dorms. You lived in a dorm.
Yeah.
Think of dorms. Think of having to shower in a communal shower in a frat house. Ugh. Or in a dorm or using the same. Like, you can't sanitize everything.
So you're talking like, now we're not going to have college football.
I'm just telling you. Think
I was
of
trying
it.
To suggest
here's
that maybe the
of
kids
it.
Of today
well, okay.
and the youth of tomorrow, that they're going to lead the
well,
way.
Here's
get
how
us
I
out
think of
this.
It. Right. Here's how I think of it. My wife's a teacher. Now, she's teaching eighth grade kids, but ultimately she still has to think about the same logistical things. And like in talking with her other teachers and with principals and stuff like that, it's those small logistical things that they're worried about. You know, everybody using the same pencil sharpener, everybody using the same, you know, like you can't have a class set of books because every kid is going to be touching those books. You know, going to the bathroom as an entire school. Like how are schools going to sanitize bathrooms after every kid uses it? Like I know it's just not something you can do. Lunches.
Oh, I know.
How are lunches going to work? Like a cafeteria setting for high school kids and middle school kids and grade school kids. Like all of this stuff needs to be worked out. And college kids are effing reckless, dude. We were reckless. College kids are reckless. And they're going to be reckless because they don't think, yeah, great. Gen Z, they're so progressive and all that stuff. They also, it's in everybody's blood when they're college students to think they'll never die. It is in their blood to think that they will never die. We had a friend that got so drunk in college that he fell off the top bunk
yeah.
onto a table.
Yeah.
And he's if fine. He would have been sleeping ah. the different direction, ah, his head good. Would have cracked off
no,
the corner of the table.
Did it?
Instead, he had a great corner bruise right on his butt of no. where he fell. And I'm telling you.
Did he die?
No, he didn't die.
So
luckily,
there you go. He was fine.
Kids are stupid and kids think they are invincible.
Wow. you know, I tried to get us to a place where we would feel good about this.
I'm sorry, man.
But now, I mean, there's going to be no college football.
There's going to be college football.
Are you sure?
I think so.
They're
playing. Listen.
You just painted a picture that all college kids are stupid, and then it's going to be the demise of society when these kids show up on campus.
I've been saying it for about a week now. Smart college coaches will have herd immunity.
Wait, you're suggesting that Saban will have herd immunity by the time they get to the fall?
Listen, you better bring that. USC better bring it, because the tide will be ready. The tide will be ready September 5th, my friend.
It's unbelievable. Dre on the South Side, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Dre?
What's up, bro? Outstanding, Chris Black. Man, long-time listener, first-time caller.
What's up,
Dre? I just wanted to say...
Thanks, man.
Bro, Abdallah, you're hitting around it. You're like, you're hitting all around the nail, but you just won't hit the nail on the head. So are you basically saying that, are we under some type of government conspiracy? Are they clouding our eyes with some type of shroud or veil or something? Because how can they keep us all safe with this, air quote, COVID-19? Like, what is really going on? The whole world has shut down. I'm getting beside myself. Someday we can contract like a cold or a flu. That is impossible for us to be safe. I've been back to work since March 18th. And because Ford needs cars built, they were willing to expose all 1,500 of us every shift, three shifts a day, to the what we call the COVID-19 or whatever they got. Everybody out here wearing masks, people wearing masks in their cars by themselves. I just want to know what you guys are thinking about that. Because
Hey, Dre, you work at Ford?
Yes, sir.
I read an article that did they give you guys like watches to keep away from each other, so it would let you know?
No, they didn't. You want to know what the Ford protocols is at the Chicago assembly plant?
Go ahead.
Coming in, we walk one way. Leaving, they walk another way. The people that's giving us masks and they're so-called taking our temperatures as we come through the tunnel, they're just behind the plastic shield. Other than that, once we get into the plant, there is no more social distance. And when I tell you 1,500 people per shift work there, per shift, how is anybody being safe? On top of people being contracted with the COVID, oh, that person hit it, that person, they're on the motor line. Oh, over there on the door line. The place is too big, 3.1 million square feet. All them people working there, and we are literally on top of each other. Something is not right. I don't believe none of it.
Thank you for the call, Dre. Let's go to Mike in Hoffman Estates. You're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, just wanted to kind of agree with part of you guys with, I think there's absolutely college football this year. I think at the end of the day, when this COVID shit comes out, a lot of people kind of retract on what they say when they see that the millions, if not billions of dollars, could and will be lost. So I think they'll definitely just find a way to just go, you know what, we'll do this and that to make COVID not as bad as everyone is portraying it to be, and they will have college football. These schools care so much about the revenue that comes from football that they've already figured out how to get all the kids there and have them learn from their apartments and dorm rooms. They got that checked out. Their whole focus this summer and up until fall is how are we going to get these fall sports, aka college football, for these big schools. You think Alabama's not going to have football this year? I think there's no way that the NCAA and these universities find a way to quote unquote have a safe football season.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it.
Look, I'm in no way trying to say that there's a conspiracy theory. I 100% believe that there's a coronavirus. COVID-19 is a problem. Like 120,000 people have died in the United States.
Yes.
Like it's real, but it does affect different people different ways. It's like any sickness. Some people get it. Some people don't. Some people contract it easier than some other people. Older people have weaker immune systems, so they're more likely to get it. It's simple as that. But the problem is you can't have a bunch of people at a school. You can't have, you know, a few hundred thousand people going to a college or however many it is that go to a college and have them just say, oh, well, it's back. We're back in the fall and it's just no problem. There's going to be problems. People are going to have – it's going to shut schools down maybe. And some schools are better equipped than other schools. And some football teams will be better to handle it than other football teams. And since you don't have a governing – you have the NCAA, but the NCAA also needs to make money. So if the SEC plays and the Big 12 doesn't or the Big 10 doesn't, they'll still go along with it because they still need to make money.
I know we have to break – yes. I think a major flaw, like when we look back on this pandemic, I think one thing that to me will come out is that because it's a virus that you can't see when someone has it until after the fact, days after the fact, really plays with people's minds on it being real or not real, you know, real or fake, right? Like if it was, you know, in zombie movies when the zombie like bites someone, then they immediately start like drooling blood.
And, that one guy,
and then it's like so obvious that they're now infected, like in zombie movies. Yeah. Like if that was taking place, like if you could see immediately who was infected, I think people would have a different response.
Well,
to
you
it.
Also know there's always that one guy who like gets bit and tries to hide it.
Well, right, and then he starts twitching.
And then you're like, well, now we got to put you down, dude.
He's twitching. He's twitchy over in the corner, and then you got to, you know, you got to take care of that, right?
Yes, there's...
We have an NBA backstory coming up next.
Wear your masks, dude.
10 years ago tonight, the Lakers win the championship, and Kobe gets his fifth championship title. We talk about it next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Thanks to Sean Davis for producing tonight's show. You can find the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app of tonight's show. Just search for the Black and Abdallah section. You can download all of our podcasts on the show, including all of our NBA backstories. And if you're feeling a little nostalgic for some Bulls basketball conversation, during The Last Dance, we did, 10 different Bulls backstory podcasts as well. So you can find those all on the Black and Abdallah section on the ESPN Chicago app. 1994, June 17th, we all consumed this.
Right now that O.J. sitting there in the passenger seat with a gun pointed at his own head.
Somebody turned the TV on and there he is.
14 units of the Orange County Sheriff's Department and Highway Patrol following behind a good distance.
Oh my God, this isn't real. This can't be real.
We're dumbfounded. Law enforcement is following Simpson. They want him to stop. Red lights and siren. It's not an escort. Why are they allowing him to continue?
Really, the game plan is really being conducted by Mr. Simpson at this point, and it's very much like when the president travels down a major thoroughfare like a freeway.
I was wondering, maybe around the next curve, they've got it marked off and they're going to just force the stop. It wasn't like they were going 100 miles an hour. But I'm not a police tactician. That was their call.
I've covered so many of these things. This was not usual police behavior. If O.J. Simpson were black, that wouldn't have happened. He'd be on the ground getting clubbed. But because he transcended race and color to this exalted status of celebrity, he got a motorcade.
This is not a chase. This is basically an accompaniment.
So that's a clip from the outstanding documentary from ESPN, O.J. Made in America. O.J. in the white Bronco chase in Los Angeles the night of June 17th, 1994. 95 million people on that night consumed a part of that chase on television. It goes down, if you remove Super Bowls from the highest viewed television shows all time in the history of television, the only thing that outrates it is the finale of MASH. Every other thing that outrates it are Super Bowls. There are no other live shows or live programming or original programming that rank higher than the 95 million people that tuned in to watch OJ drive down the road as police followed him back in 1994. And it's just such a wild thing to kind of go through and think about the events that unfolded that day.
Well, it's one of the whole thing is one of those moments where, like, you remember where you were forever, right? And I think for us, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but watching the verdict, watching the chase is, like, one of my first memories of being in, like, a room with my parents and watching something and being like, what is going on. Like, I don't want to compare it to 9/11 or like the JFK assassination, but you know it's a media event. Like, it's a live event.
You know it's a big deal.
Where you know, we're obviously, we weren't born when JFK was assassinated. We remember 9/11 vividly. But it's one of those things where, like, everyone is doing the same thing. Everyone is glued to the TV. Everybody's watching. Everybody is right there consuming it. And you're like, I can't turn away from this right now. I mean, I was overseas at the time, and I still remember watching the verdict, watching the chase when it happened. And it was nuts. And it's easily the best documentary that ESPN's done, that in The Last Dance. But the 30 for 30, the one that's just called June 17th, 1994, where they just go through all the footage. There's no narration. There's nothing. It just goes through everything that was taking place that day, is one of the best things, because it's all footage a lot of people hadn't seen. It's behind-the-scenes footage of Bob Costas during the NBA Finals. It's stuff from, wasn't Palmer golfing that day?
Yeah, Arnold Palmer had his final round in the U.S. Open that day.
And then
day.
Also the World Cup was going on, was opening up that weekend.
And it was opening at Soldier Field here in Chicago.
Exactly. And so it's just, I just remember it being crazy.
Yeah, Brett Morgan directed that 30 for 30. It's called June 17th, 1994. And you're right, Abdallah, that and O.J. Made in America are my two favorite documentaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's the whole thing. You know, you put that together with what took place in Los Angeles in the early 90s. And that documentary, O.J. Made in America, really paints a good picture for those who don't know what actually took place and why it's such a big cultural event.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with O.J., especially after the trial, when he wasn't put in jail afterwards from it. So it's one of those days when it hits on the calendar, you see June 17th, and the first thing you think of is, wow, it's that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
1994.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a long time ago. So if you're a young guy, you like listening to the show, check it out. Those documentaries are really good. I think it'll open your eyes. Black and Abdallah, Jonathan Hood with Frey Coleman coming up next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.